This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Questions about charter schools in Michigan have been raised in a Detroit Free Press series which examines the transparency and money which is spent on the academies. Gary Miron is a professor of education leadership, research, and technology at Western Michigan University. He is quoted in the Free Press series and has spent many years studying and reporting on charter schools in Michigan as well as other states. Gary Miron, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Gordon.
The Free Press found little transparency, despite the fact that there's about $1 billion a year in taxpayer money which is spent on charter schools in Michigan. And I suppose the first question someone might have when they read that figure is, how does it get to that point?
It gets there gradually, but it's that that finding is largely connected with involvement of the for-profit education management organizations, or EMOs, and they have grown pretty rapidly and over the years. Our own data set, we find that 79% of the state's charter schools are now operated by for-profit management companies, another 10% operated by nonprofit education management organizations. And so that leaves just about 10% of the schools that are what we would call independent or mom-and-pop charter schools, which was the charter school idea, that they would be small, independent, and locally run schools.
79%. You say in Michigan, run by for-profit corporations.
That's correct.
How does that compare with other states?
Other states are racing to catch up, but seriously, they are far behind. We can look at Ohio and Florida, which are two states that have increasing numbers of for-profit companies operating their schools. And there we see percentages lying between 35 and 50% of the schools run by for-profit companies. So they're far behind Michigan. Michigan is clearly an anomaly in the nation.
The Free Press also found that charter schools have not fared any better than traditional schools in educating children who are in poverty. Isn't that one of the other selling points that was used when charter schools were coming into place, that this would be an alternative for areas which have not been well served by traditional schools?
Right. Yep, that's a finding, but it's not a new finding. That's a finding that we've been seeing again and again over the last 20 years.
One of the Free Press stories, the one that you're specifically quoted in, concerned the governing boards of these schools. What sort of oversight do they have? What sort of powers do they have to address problems if they find them?
The key is really the oversight of the charter schools, and it really lies with the charter school boards. These boards are public boards. They have fiduciary responsibility. They're legally responsible for their school, and they do two things. They represent their charter school, their public charter school, and they represent the taxpayers of Michigan, and they represent and protect those interests. And what we often see is that the management company, because the management company starts the school, it handpicks and prepares a list of people that will be on the board, hands that to the authorizer who grants the charter. They approve that list. And so that the way the board is selected by the management company often means that these are people who are, they may not fully understand their responsibilities, or they may be close friends of people within the management company itself. So they don't always have an arm's length agreement. They often don't feel the need or understand the need for doing due diligence when they review contracts or other things that the school engages in. The board is important. It has to have transparency. And as this series in the Free Press revealed, that often these boards don't have access to evidence and documentation. If they don't have information, they can't take decisions. They can't do due diligence. We see increasing numbers of charter school boards who are filing lawsuits against their management companies, trying to access financial information. How is the money being spent? And the management companies simply say, it's proprietary. It's private. You don't need to know that. All you know is that you signed an agreement and that we're gonna keep a 2 or 3% year-end balance. The rest of the money is swept, and we're going to do our best with that money, and trust us.
Is the role of governing boards where a lot of the problems crop up in terms of lack of transparency, lack of accountability?
It's there, but it's also with the authorizers, because what we're seeing now, and the Free Press revealed that as well, is that the close relationship between these for-profit companies and the charter school authorizers. So we see instances where the authorizer steps in and fires board members that start to question the management company, that start to question and request information that the management company may not want to share with its charter school board.
Let's take a step back and explain who the authorizers are.
In Michigan, we have multiple authorizers. Most charter schools are authorized by state universities that have boards appointed by the governor. So that excludes University of Michigan, Wayne State, and Michigan State University. So most state universities are engaged in chartering. A few do not. Also, local community colleges, as well as school districts and intermediate school districts, can grant charters.
Interestingly enough, Western Michigan University would fall under what you just described there. The Board of Trustees is appointed by the governor, so not elected. But yet, Western Michigan University has not waded into charter school authorization. Do we have a good idea of why?
Yeah, and over the years, there's been pressure on Western to step up and to sponsor its fair share of charters. Western has considered it at a few different points in time, I know that. But Western has contributed extensively to the charter school reform here in Michigan, mostly because of the evaluation and research that we've done. Between 1997 and 2002, we were engaged in a number of contracts with the Michigan Department of Education to evaluate the Michigan charter school reform. Since then, and my grad students and I have done extensive studies and publications on the charter schools. And in 2002, we wrote a pretty important book called What's Public About Charter Schools? And it laid out some of the issues that have come up and things that needed to be done to improve our charter schools. A whole chapter is devoted to legislative ideas and suggestions for addressing the growth of the for-profit companies. And we kind of warned back in 2002 what this reform might look like if we continue to grow and have more and more extensive, increase this involvement of the for-profit companies. And again, today we're looking at that what we wrote back in 2002, you know, a dozen years ago, and unfortunately nobody took heed of that advice that we provided.
The Free Press did find that there are some charter schools which are innovative and have excellent academic outcomes. In your research, what do you find are the common things amongst the charter schools which you'd say are producing a quality education for the students who go there?
From 2000 to 2004, we did a national study on the correlates of success in American charter schools. And from that study, we can more scientifically look at what are those factors, not specific to Michigan, but across the nation. What we found is that stability of leadership and teachers was very important. When we had high teacher attrition, the charter schools were not performing as well. But there tended to be, we also see some relationship with the size of the reforms. We see small reforms with more oversight actually performing better. Michigan is one of those states that ramped up its reform very quickly, and we didn't get in a good oversight in time. And now it's hard after the fact to come back and regulate or provide safeguards, given the extensive involvement and influence of the charter school establishment today. It's hard to go backwards now and try to change that. But other states that have grown more slowly, they've learned from states like Michigan, and they've tried to strengthen the oversight, provide board training and other things to make sure that they function well before growing the reform.
Are there states out there that you would consider a model for how they handle the accountability and oversight of charter schools?
Yeah. Here at Western, we've been asked to do 9 different state evaluations for Michigan, for departments of ed and state boards of education. 2 states in particular, Delaware and Connecticut, we had rather positive findings. And in part, those are smaller reforms. The focus there was on quality, not on the quantity. So we saw the authorizers more actively engaged in overseeing the schools, providing support when needed, but also closing those struggling schools or schools that didn't have the transparency that the authorizers believe that the taxpayers and others deserved.
And the Free Press series points out that there are a lot of charter schools in Michigan which have shown to be underperforming, and yet that they have remained open for a long period of time.
Yes. And I think if we look at the political background, we see 2 types of charter school reforms. We see some reforms, especially when there's bipartisan support, they tend to be smaller and focus on improving the public school system by example, meaning let's have a few high-quality charter schools. They'll be innovative, and the public schools can learn from those examples. There's another set of states that tend to be more partisan legislation, and that Michigan would fall into that case. But there the tendency is to let's grow the reform as quickly as we can. Let's get as many charter schools as we can to create a competitive effect. So I think for those policymakers that may be aware that the quality isn't there, they still believe that there could be a way to force or use charter schools as a lever for improving traditional public schools by competition.
And the idea in part of having charter schools compete with public schools was to give them some more freedom from regulations and to allow them to experiment a little more, correct? So how do you balance those two things, allowing them to experiment and yet also transparency and accountability on the other side?
Yeah, it's a big trade-off. Autonomy, you get this autonomy, but you're going to be more highly accountable. And here at Western, back in the 90s and the early part of this century, we did a lot of training for charter schools to help them to demonstrate accountability. We taught them these things. Unfortunately, the accountability system shifted more to a performance accountability, not a mission-driven accountability. So what we saw—
I'm sorry, can you explain the difference between performance and mission-driven?
Well, the mission-driven is that charter schools were going to be unique and mission-driven. They're going to be small and innovative in that they would be held accountable based on their unique missions. And so they needed to create and get agreement on measurable outcomes. And then their authorizer would look at an annual report or data based on that annual, on those agreed-upon measurable outcomes. And that's how they would be held accountable. When No Child Left Behind came on board, it had those extensive testing requirements and that all public schools, including charter schools, had to be measured by the same standardized test. And with that increasing testing, the charter schools have shifted towards teaching to the same test and less innovation has occurred. Another factor that's impeded the innovation, however, has been the management companies. Charter schools were supposed to be small, locally run schools. With the management companies, they have a cookie-cutter approach. Their applications for charters are almost identical except for the address and the name of the school. And they can generate scores of applications very quickly. And when they operate these schools, they focus on the same brand, the same and their models aren't very innovative. They're more back to basics. They're very much in line with what we do in traditional public schools, actually. So these management companies have been taking decisions about their schools, not locally, but sometimes across the state or across the country. And the schools look all alike. So this has also impeded any innovation that the local founders may have had.
To go back to a moment for standardized testing, that's a complaint that people have had about education in general. Too much teaching to the test. Questions about how well standardized testing can really get at educational quality. In some ways, then, are charter schools dealing with the same problems that traditional schools are when it comes to trying to evaluate who is truly educating children well?
Yeah. Well, the deal with charter schools is that they were supposed to demonstrate success. And that was because charter schools weren't proactive and because they didn't demonstrate success, there had to be some effort by policymakers to bring them back into the fold to have some kind of accountability. And that then shifted from the mission-driven accountability to the performance accountability, which is easier for oversight agents to monitor because it's all standardized testing and you can compare across the board some. Standardized tests are an important part of evaluating schools, but it should only be one part. The populations and the things that go on in the schools vary considerably. And, ideally, we would have diverse forms of accountability that we could look at together to form an opinion about each of our schools.
And what many people will say about traditional schools, public schools, is that when you're looking at standardized tests, you really have to account for the environment the kids come from, the demographics, the income level, those sort of things. Wouldn't a lot of that also apply to charter schools where we're talking about, or should be in many cases, talking about students who have come from a place where the traditional schools have not served them well?
Yeah, well, with the charter schools, we see we see the similar things, but as researchers, we try to control for those, and we have more rigorous designs used across the country and less rigorous designs. Across the board, we continue to see the same pictures, that they perform similarly or very slightly less well with demographically similar schools. But at the same time, charter schools, when we look at them, there are successful charter schools. Even though Michigan is struggling as a charter school reform state, we have successful charter schools, and also states like Connecticut and Delaware, even though I would say that they're successful reforms, they also have a few poor performing charter schools that are still operating. So it's not easy to generalize. But here in Michigan, what we see is that charter schools are accelerating segregation by race, by class, and ability. So when we make comparisons, it's complicated because we have the all-black schools and the all-white schools. We have the schools with all higher income and middle-class students, and we have the other charter schools that focus on just low-income students. We have some schools that, we got a handful of schools that focus on children with disabilities. Charter schools, but most charter schools serve very few children with disabilities, and if they do, they tend to have mild, less costly to remediate disabilities. So what charter schools are doing is they're fragmenting our public school system and accelerating segregation patterns that already exist, but it also makes it harder to find comparisons for them when we want to compare them in terms of performance because they look so different in terms of their populations of students they serve.
If someone were reading this Free Press series and they're in the Michigan Department of Education or the state legislature and they say, boy, we need to make some changes, and Gary Miron's phone rang and they said, what would you suggest that we do? You would say what?
Legislation. Some people are very upset. I think the authors of those Free Press articles, they're very concerned about these for-profit companies. In a way, I guess I am too, but let's stop and think. These are for-profit companies. Should we be surprised that they're gaming the system? Should we be surprised that they're trying to maximize profit? That's what they do. They were invited into the education system to bring an entrepreneurial spirit. And now they're gaming it, and many of them are making they're making boatloads of money. And the problem isn't necessarily the management companies, it's the legislators. We need legislation that puts in place the right incentives. For example, these for-profit companies, they focus on lower elementary students because they get the same amount of money, whether it's a high school student, middle school, or lower elementary. So they game the system.
Because lower elementary students are going to be less expensive
less
than a
expensive.
High school student?
Exactly. Often they don't provide transportation. The money is included in the funding they get, but why provide transportation when they're not required? If you provide transportation, it costs more money, and it also invites more low-income students into your school or may facilitate that. So we see across the board that they game the system, and yet, that's what they're doing. That's what they're supposed to do. We shouldn't be surprised that they're making boatloads of money, but what we need are the right incentives in place, and we need the safeguards in place. Without those, they have free rein. And what we see is that they are refusing to share information because they're private. They're playing by the rules, and they're using the rules to their advantage. What we need to do is look at those, again, the incentives and the guidelines, make sure they're in place so that if we're going to have them operating in the public school system, that they can still bring that entrepreneurial spirit and use it to improve the public schools and the taxpayers' best interest and not in their stockholders' best interest.
Just to make sure we're clear on what you're saying here, you believe there is a place for for-profit companies to run charter schools in Michigan, given proper oversight and those sort of things?
I think if we had the proper oversight and safeguards and incentives in place, I think they wouldn't have as destructive a role as they have now. But I also know that I believe that we could also create competition and use the competitive spirit without these actors, these for-profit companies. But we do need to tip the balance so that the charter school boards have more influence than the management companies they're supposed to be overseeing. And, that's something that has to happen, that we have to find some way to get the power back into these charter school boards and not allow the management companies to be so powerful.
Gary Miron, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Gordon.
Gary Miron is a professor of education, leadership, research, and technology at Western Michigan University. This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.